Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, July 30th, 2022, weekend edition. Oil rigs up for the 23rd straight month, by Mel McEwen. Drilling activity rose by its highest level in several weeks as still strong commodity prices continue to fuel the rig count. Growth in the Permian Basin activity, however, remains muted as the region posted a small gain after the previous week's decline. Oilfield Services Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count jumped by 9 rigs to 767. The rig count, which has been released weekly since the 1940s, has now risen for a record consecutive 24 months. There were 605 rigs seeking crude oil and 220 more than reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for oil rose by 11 during July. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 2 to 157. The number of rigs drilling for gas was unchanged for the month of July. Midland among top counties for buying power. One of the highest per capita incomes of any county in the United States helped Midland County rank as the 6th best county nationally for purchasing power. The financial advice website showed its annual study on the places with the most purchasing power that Midland County ranked 6th in the nation and 2nd in Texas. The study measured the income of local residents against the cost of living in each county. Midland County ranked behind the Panhandle County of Sherman for purchasing power in Texas, mainly because of a per capita income that ranked 1st in Texas and 10th in the nation. Midland and Sherman were 2 of the 3 counties in Texas to rank in the top 10 nationally. Teton, Wyoming ranked 1st, while Union, South Dakota, Bristol Bay, Alaska, Sherman and Potter, South Dakota, rounded out the top 5. Midland ranked 6th and Shackelford 10th. The average per capita income was $59,590. Midland's cost of living prevented the county from ranking higher. According to Smart Asset, Midland's cost of living ranked 253rd in the state as the 2nd highest in Texas and 3,083rd across the nation. The average cost of living nationwide was $37,925. Hector County ranked 1,116th in the state for purchasing power. Information was taken from a 2020 Bureau of Economic Analysis report and a Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Expenditure Survey. AST ready to ramp up activity at Spaceport, by Mel McEwen. After months and months of painstakingly assembly, the Blue Walker 3 test satellite, AST Spacemobile's Midland team has said farewell to their project. As the Chief Executive Officer Abel Avalon tweeted, as a satellite was packed and loaded, it was leaving the nest. The satellite is now headed to an off-site facility in California where it will undergo final environmental testing, which will provide flight data to be used during its launch late this year. After testing, the satellite will then make its way to Cape Canaveral, Florida, where it is expected to be launched aboard one of SpaceX Falcon 9 rockets. The actual launch date remains subject to change, and the window is for early to mid-September. Factors that could affect the launch date include the final testing, final integration, ground transport, timely readiness of the launch vehicle, and unknown factors like weather or technical problems. The launch of the satellite will kick off global testing with mobile network operators on 6 continents. AST SpaceMobile in May received an experimental license from the Federal Communications Commission to support testing of the satellite. The license covers space-to-ground testing of the satellite in the United States using three GPP low-band cellular frequencies and QV-band frequencies. The test satellite has an average of 693 square feet that is designed to communicate directly with cell phones via 3GPP standard frequencies. AST also announced this month that it has signed a five-year 5G deal with Nokia, under which the two companies will work to achieve their joint ambition of expanding universal coverage and connecting unserved communities around the world. Nokia's AirScale single RAN equipment aims to enable AST SpaceMobile in providing mobile services to new and existing subscribers in regions currently not served by terrestrial communication networks. This includes connecting devices globally on land or sea or in flight. Nokia will provide equipment from its comprehensive energy-efficient AirScale portfolio, including its AirScale base station, powered by its latest generation of Nokia's ReefShark system-on-chip chipsets. Tommy Uto, president of mobile networks at Nokia, told the Reporter Telegram that Nokia is excited to work with AST Mobile to close the digital divide globally while strengthening our partnerships in North America. As technology and space economy emerges, we look forward to being the go-to partner for cutting-edge solutions. AST Mobile Space plans to bring cellular connectivity directly to 4G and 5G devices via low Earth orbiting satellites in collaboration with mobile network operators. The company has entered into agreements and understandings with mobile network operators that collectively service over 1.8 billion cellular customers. Those low Earth orbiting satellites are expected to be built at AST Midland facility. If the Blue Walker 3 test satellite performs correctly, the company has a goal of producing up to 2 commercial satellites per month from the facility. The company also plans to expand its anticipated total production capacity to up to 6 satellites per month through a second location just down the road from the mobile facilities in the Spaceport Business Park at Midland International Air and Spaceport, which the company recently purchased and is retrofitting. Strambler Trishiti file for November elections as sign-up period begins. Two MISD candidates, Terry Strambler and John Trishiti, have filed to put their names on the November ballot. Elections on November 1st will include Midland ISD, City of Midland, and Midland College races. Those races include Midland ISD District 3, District 5, and District 6. Midland College, Place 1, Place 2, and Place 3. City of Midland, Mayor Patrick Payton, District 3 Jack Lab, and District 4. Strambler will run for Midland ISD District 3, which is generally located in southwest Midland. Trishiti will run for re-election in District 5, which includes areas in north and northeast Midland. Payton, Ladd, and Blong have announced their intention to run for re-election, but had not filed as of noon Friday. All of Midland College's seats are at large positions. The sign-up period to put a name on the local ballot is July 25th to August 22nd. Suspect tries to burn down the sheriff's office detention facility. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for any information that leads to the arrest of a suspect who tried to burn down the Midland County Sheriff's Office detention facility. On July 24th, the Midland Sheriff's Office detention facility was placed on lockdown due to heavy smoke in the detention facility. Surveillance footage showed the suspect wearing a Dallas Cowboy football jersey, jeans, and a baseball cap, throwing a lit road flare on top of the building, attempting to burn the facility down. The video showed the suspect standing on Washington Avenue and throwing the flare onto the building. If a person has information about the suspect, call the hotline. Go to 694tips.com or use the mobile app P3TIPS. July to be one of the warmest months in Midland history. July will be one of the hottest months in record on Midland. The average temperature through Thursday at Midland International Airport was 87 degrees, which puts the month on track to be the third warmest for July on record in Midland and tied for seventh all-time for any month. The NWS expects high temperatures in the mid to upper 90s Saturday and Sunday. Low temperatures are expected to remain in the mid-70s. The near-record heat continues the trend of a warmer Midland in the past 15 years. Should the average temperature in July not change dramatically, the four warmest months of July will have taken place since 2011. Also, seven of the eight warmest months in Midland's history will have taken place since 2011. July also continued to in the dry conditions in Midland. The Weather Service reported 0.03 inch of rain through Thursday. That would mean July 2022 would go down as one of the driest months in July on record. The NWS also showed that 2.25 inches had fallen through Thursday. The typical average rainfall through July is 7.5 inches, meaning the departure from normal was more than 5 inches. 8 years in prison for involvement in drive-by shooting. A 21-year-old Midland man has been sentenced to 8 years in prison for his involvement in a 2019 drive-by shooting. Ivan Zapata was found guilty Wednesday by a Midland County jury on one count of deadly conduct discharge firearm. The jury was presented with evidence on Monday and Tuesday before finding Zapata guilty after 20 minutes of deliberation. The evidence presented showed that on May 13th, around 11 p.m., Zapata was involved in a drive-by shooting of a Midland residence. 11 shots were fired into the residence. During the original investigation, it was determined that the residence was targeted because it belonged to one of Zapata's high school teachers. The jury also returned an affirmative deadly weapon finding, meaning that Zapata will be required to serve at least half of his sentence before he's eligible for parole. Zapata's co-defendant currently awaits trial for his involvement. Three phases for Todd Drive Project. After discussions with the City of Midland, the Texas Department of Transportation has closed the Todd Drive crossover on Loop 250 and will add auxiliary lanes in the area in the interest of safety. The work, which also includes some road rehabilitation, will be done in three phases. The first phase, which started earlier this month, will rehabilitate both frontage roads between Fairgrounds Road and County Road 1150. The second phase will rehabilitate the eastbound Fairgrounds Road exit ramp. The third phase will obliterate the Todd Drive crossover of Loop 250 and add auxiliary lanes in the area, making northbound Todd Drive a right-out-only intersection, eliminates the conflict points, and improves safety. Adding auxiliary lanes offers more room for traffic to merge and/or weave and improve safety. The three phases should take about 3 months to complete. Once the crossover is closed, northbound Todd Drive motorists wanting to go west will have to go east on the service road for about a mile before using the U-turn under the County Road 1150 overpass to return west. Todd Drive is frequently referred to as Todd Road and is also known as County Road 1160. A Loop 250 overpass at Todd Drive is in the planning stages. Construction funding is not yet identified, so no timeline is available. The Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization has listed the project as a priority, as has the City of Midland. The City of Midland has hired a consultant to begin developing plans for the overpass. It is also working on a project of their own to extend Todd Drive north of Loop 250. Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving of Odessa is doing the work as part of the contract for the construction of the recently completed overpass on Loop 250 at County Road 1140. The work near Todd Road has an estimated cost of $2.5 million.
Hello, this is Michael reading a couple of additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram published Saturday, July 30th, 2022. Midland County still tops West Texas for home prices, by Stuart Doreen. While the median prices for houses are increasing across the region, No larger population county in West Texas can compare to Midland, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The center reported that the median-priced home in June inside Midland County sold for $330,000, the second highest on record. That price was $55,000 more than the median price in Randall County, one of two counties where Amarillo is located. Taylor, Tom Green, and Lubbock counties rounded out the top five. The larger metropolitan areas around the state showed prices generally above the price in Midland County, according to the A&M Real Estate Center. Travis County, where Austin resides, shows a median-priced home of $611,500 in June. Collin County, Plano, McKinney, Allen, and Frisco, was second at $575,000. Dallas, Tarrant, Fort Worth, and Harris, Houston, also showed higher median prices than Midland. What's That Going to Be Near Midland Country Club? By Tim Fisher. Development continues along the State Highway 349 corridor. Retail is being built to go along with the homes already in place on Big Spring Street, north of Loop 250. That includes the Fourth Wendy's restaurant in the 5500 block of Big Spring. The restaurant under construction is expected to better serve residents in North Midland. The new restaurant, located at 5516 North Big Spring, is being built just south of Mockingbird Lane and south of the Jack's Convenience Store at that location.
Edwin Era Burr, Jr. passed away on July 24th. Graveside service is planned for Thursday, August 4th at 9 a.m. The service will be held at Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Louis David Simon III passed away on July 26th. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. on July 30th at the College Street Church of Christ in Junction. Interment will follow at the Simon Ranch Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of the Kimball Funeral Home in Junction. Tom Dragasek of Midland passed away on July 27th. A celebration of life will be at 10:30 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland on August the 4th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, July 30th. Game room issue continues in Odessa. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven announced this week he intends to once again ask council members to shut down game rooms located within the city limits. Back in April, three justices serving in the Texas 2nd District Court of Appeals classified eight-liner gaming machines as lotteries, thus making them unconstitutional under Texas law. The two Fort Worth game rooms at the heart of the case appealed the decision, but Hoven said the court recently affirmed its decision. Hoven said he plans to meet with legal staff to discuss the recent developments and then ask for the topic to be placed on an upcoming city workshop agenda. My intent is to ask the city to stop the permitting of game rooms going forward. Then the second phase would be to start revoking licenses within the parameters of the law. That's where I need to get clarification. What are those parameters? Hoven said. I think we have a difference of opinion here. I think that we're within our legal right to do so because they're illegal, according to the Second Court of Appeals and Texas Constitution and Texas law penal codes. I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think the issue's confused. He said he has the support of the citizens of Odessa. I don't practice law in the state of Texas, but I do know this. This is a priority for people. People hate the way it makes the city look. They hate what's going on inside them. They just want to see them gone from our city. Hoven suggested the city ought to seize eight-liner machines when the Second Court of Appeals issued its initial ruling, but the council instead opted to tighten up the city's ordinance overseeing game rooms. The ordinance now states new game rooms can't operate within 1,500 feet of each other or neighborhoods, churches, and schools. New game rooms can't be located outside light or heavy industrial areas, have more than 50 machines or have door or window coverings that prevent officers from being able to see their operations from the outside. Existing game rooms have been grandfathered in under the old ordinance unless they allow their business license to lapse, be suspended, or revoked. They will also lose their grandfathered status if they change their name or begin to operate under a new owner. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said Thursday that the Second Court of Appeals did not affirm their earlier decision. Instead, the court denied a motion that would have put the matter before all seven judges serving in the court. Gallivan repeated what he said in April. The Second Court of Appeals does not set a precedent for Ector County. The Seventh Court of Appeals in Amarillo ruled the exact opposite from the Second Court of Appeals in 2000, and while no one took that decision up to the Texas Supreme Court, Gallivan said he believes ultimately it will be the Texas Supreme Court that will settle this matter. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, July 30th. Produced waters uses examined. Distinguished speakers review complex topic August 16th and 17th. The multitudinous aspects of the produced water that's taken from oil and natural gas wells will be discussed in detail in a Navigating the Great Reset seminar August 16th and 17th at the Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion in South Central Midland, just off the north side of I-20. After breakfast and registration, the event will begin with Texas Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright detailing oil, water, earthquakes, and opportunities on August 16th, followed by Texas Pacific Water Resources Executive Vice President Robert Crane of Midland and others reviewing produced water recycling in a changing regulatory era. Fees are $850 for members of the non-sponsoring Produced Water Society, $995 for non-members, and $650 for a day pass. There are lesser fees for virtual attendance. Register on the group's website at producedwatersociety.com or call its Austin office at 512-716-8536. PWS President Steve Coffey will welcome participants. Produced water is extracted from oil and gas wells or separated from oil, condensate, or gas after extraction, and much of the seminar will deal with constructive alternatives to reinjecting it into the earth with saltwater disposal wells. West Texas National Bank Marketing Vice President Jonna Smoot of Midland is interested because she helped start the related Permian Basin Water and Energy Conferences held in 2018, 19, and 20, and she chaired the one in February. The energy industry needs to educate the public on how much produced water is being used for energy as opposed to agriculture, Smoot said. There has been a lot of bad press about fracking. Clean water goes down the hole and produced water comes out, and we need to make sure it just doesn't go back down a hole with disposal wells, which are believed to be causing the earthquakes in West Texas. The industry has been a good steward of our water, and it wants to do an even better job of finding different ways to monetize the produced water so that it has a beneficial reuse. It's about safety and best practices. Smoot said the nation's 900,000 oil and gas wells each generate 21 billion barrels of produced water each year. She said clean water is used for fracking because it gets the best results. At 10:15 on August 16th, there will be a panel discussion on State of the Consortiums, what are Texas and New Mexico stakeholders working on? It will feature the U.S. Department of Energy official Marcus Drubin, Rusty Smith of the Texas Produced Water Consortium, Mike Hightower of the New Mexico Produced Research Consortium, and former ConocoPhillips executive Karen Work. With 64 speakers from throughout the nation, the seminar will also have Laura Capper of the Energy Makers Advisory Group from Houston, Rob Bryant of B3 Insight from Denver, Nathan Alleman of All Consulting from Tulsa, and Kyle Murray of Murray Geo Consulting from Norman, Oklahoma, talking about feeling the seismic pressure at 1 p.m. on the first day. Other topics will be the what, where, how, and why of environmental, social, and governance at $100 per barrel. Produced water's role in the circular economy, reviewing the treatment focus, Let's Get Physical. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton will open the August 17th program. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, July 30th. Brantley Creek will land on Fodry Road. In the never-ending list of good barbecue joints and food trucks that are located in Midland, Odessa, one in particular has risen in popularity over the last 3 years. Brantley Creek Barbecue, which is owned and operated out of a food truck by Brandon McPherson and his wife Ashley, is currently located at the parking lot of Odessa Camera at 4400 Tanglewood. Brantley Creek Barbecue has been in business since 2017, but it was in 2019 when Brandon decided to open it up full-time after his previous employer, Flint Energy, closed. We already had the trailer and had competed at barbecue competitions, and we were already catering, so we figured why not go full-time. While it was a slow start at first, Brandon says business has slowly picked up recently. His business was featured in Texas Monthly back in April, which has helped put his business on the map. Just to be mentioned and reviewed by Texas Monthly was a big accomplishment for myself, Brandon said. It was a milestone. His wife talked about how business has increased since then. Ever since all that happened, business has picked up, Ashley said. It was a breath of fresh air. The word finally got out and around. We're finally getting some steady business. Brantley Creek Barbecue was named after their 8-year-old son, Brantley. Brandon says Creek was added as a joke since there are hardly any creeks in West Texas. The added exposure has helped Brantley Creek Barbecue, and Brandon says they will soon be building a permanent location at Fodry Road near Eastridge. Right now, we're waiting on permits to be approved. All the land is cleared off. They're going to start on the parking lot in a few weeks. Brandon says the new restaurant will be on an acre of land and that he expects there to be about 55 parking spots. For now, the food truck is open only from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Wednesdays through Saturdays. Brandon says they also cater. That's all we can handle because we cook on offset smoker and it takes a lot of time. The only time we close is if we have a big catering and we can't handle both. Brandon hopes to add more employees when the time comes to open the new restaurant, but currently his staff includes a grand total of 4, including himself and Ashley. The other 2 employees include their niece and nephew, Kylie and Colby Johnson. Brandon anticipates hiring more employees when the new restaurant is built. We'll have to hire bartenders and people in the smokehouse and catering and cooks. I'm going to keep my trailer, so I'll have find a crew to run it. Since he first opened his barbecue truck, Brandon's mission has been to build a craft barbecue focused on taking meats that are imperfect and creating something close to perfection. The menu includes prime brisket, pork ribs, jalapeno sausage, turkey, rack of pork ribs, as well as brisket tacos, brisket nachos, and plenty of sandwiches and sides along with desserts.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with additional articles from the Odessa American that were published Saturday, July 30th, 2022. Local News Roundup. Will Seminar Set. In recognition of Make-A-Will Month, the OEL chapter of Alpha Pi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated will host its annual Free Will Seminar for the Permian Basin community from 10 a.m. to noon, August 6th. At the White House, 1702 East Wall Street, Midland. Local probate attorneys will provide information discussing making wills, estate planning, and the probate process. Community members who attend and stay for the entire seminar will receive a free will completed and executed for them. This is a free seminar, and an opportunity to obtain a will for free, provided by the Omicron Epsilon Lambda chapter of Alpha Pi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated as a part of the chapter's community service. Contact the Gavin Norris Law Office for more information at 432-279-0858. Gifts of Hope Building Campaign coming up. West Texas Gifts of Hope has many things going. An upcoming Cancer Sucks Fest on August 13th, Paint the Park in September, and a building campaign to expand its facilities. Executive Director Brenda Medlock said the building campaign will kick off August 13th. The current building at 700 West 1st Street officially opened in 2014. Plans are to keep their original building and add on to it. The campaign will kick off in August. I'm praying that we can raise the funds to do that by the end of this year and we can start next year, Medlock said. Currently, they are considering adding two rooms with the possibility of four. Because out of all the weeks that we've been here for this year, maybe 2 weeks we have not been full, Medlock said. Additional patients have been put up at the Elegante Hotel. They have helped us out so much when we are 100% occupied. I call Lori Winkler to see if there's any way we could have someone stay there. We do pay for it. They give us a discounted rate, Medlock said. When there is an opening, patients return to Gifts of Hope. Charlie and Wayne Scott and Mary Carlson were the ones who started the campaign to build Hope House because there were patients coming in from out of town, and there is a Midland Gifts of Hope over in Midland, Medlock said. Since people were passing through Odessa to get to the facility in Midland, which is not affiliated with the one in Odessa, they thought, why not open one in Odessa? So the campaign started, and what Charlie did is Mueller has a campaign every year for nonprofits to build a building, and Charlie sat down and did a letter, and she was in the top 50. From the top 50, she was in the top 10. From the top 10, she was selected, Medlock said. Every year, Mueller teams up with the popular television show Texas Country Reporter to find a deserving nonprofit organization in Texas to receive a free Mueller building, the company website said. The first week of October, Mueller personnel from our corporate office and branch locations travel to the location of the winning nonprofit and erect the building for their organization. Texas Country Reporter is on site during the build to film and capture the special moments, such as the dedication ceremony, where the nonprofit organization will receive the keys to their new building. Medlock said there are four rooms at West Texas Gifts of Hope. People have to be from at least 30 miles outside of Vector County to receive services. The nonprofit serves people throughout West Texas, plus Hobbs, Jowl, and Carlsbad, New Mexico. So we can do four patients plus caregivers, she said. The average stay is 6 to 8 weeks. Some who are undergoing chemotherapy stay every other week, Medlock said. When they're doing chemo, they stay an average of just 3 days. 1 day with the pump for the infusion, and then waiting 1 day, and then the 3rd day the pump is taken off, she said. People are not charged for their stays, but they should bring food. West Texas Gifts of Hope provides water, coffee, tea, and hot chocolate. Sometimes they offer Gatorade and soda. Gifts of Hope also provides sheets, towels, blankets, paper towels, toilet tissue, wigs, turbans, and new patient care bags. It's all supplied. There's no charge, Medlock said. She added that they are shocked at how many patients receive the bags. This one, we have an average of about 18 to 23 new patients every month that have received new patient bags for chemo, and we have about 17 patients receiving this new bag for radiation. It just kind of blows your mind, Medlock said. She added that you wouldn't think there would be that many people getting treatment, but COVID had an impact on people going to the doctor. Transportation also is provided. For Ector County, we have Uber and taxi service. We have a wonderful person from Uber that has just helped us out because for Ector County, that goes all the way west, and then when you go past Ector County Coliseum, that's considered north, so that's not the city limits. Every once in a while, a patient will have to go over to Midland to have tests done, so we will pay for that transportation also. So we have Medessa taxi service, and then we have an Uber service. Then people who stay here, sometimes the families drop them off, and they may not be able to walk across the street. So we pay for a taxi service to take them from here over to Texas Oncology, Medlock said. There are others who would rather not stay at Hope House, preferring to undergo their chemo and go home. So they also provide gas cards. Also, if someone is going to San Antonio, for example, Hope House will help them as well. Medlock said she saw the ad for an executive director of Hope House, and she used to attend church with Tommy and Barbara Henderson. They thought she would be wonderful in the job. I do come from a family that loves to give back, Medlock said. She went through the interview process and was selected. As I started working here, I was shocked at the things that we give assistance to and so thankful. We serve lunches over there for the chemo patients because they are there for 4 to 6 hours, and that could be the only meal they receive. 5 days a week, we have volunteers that go to each person and ask, what would you like? We have peanut butter and jelly, we have chicken salad, we have tuna salad, we have pimento cheese, and we have ham or ham and cheese. They can have 2 sandwiches if they like, and it has just been wonderful. They get chips, they get cookies, they get a drink with that, Medlock said. They also offer Jell-O and soup. One of the things we want to start doing is apples, oranges, and bananas for them to take home, because a lot of the patients are single. That's the only meal they will receive. Some will eat 1 sandwich here, and they take the other sandwich home. We really do try now. We've added juices to what we offer, so it's just rewarding. We average probably about 23 sandwiches a day, she said. They stopped providing sandwiches for a week or two during COVID and then started offering brown bag lunches for delivery to the West Texas Oncology Center. That happened for almost 2 years. And then this year, we were allowed back in. We have some wonderful volunteers that stuck with us. They know the patients, and they were so happy to get back in because they also expanded over at Texas Oncology. They added 8 more seats, so they can take in 32 patients to do chemo at one time, Medlock said. Cancer Sucks Fest on August 13th will be held at La Hacienda. It will feature the Casey Donahue Band with special guests Kevin Fowler and Treaty Oak Revival. Gates open at 6 p.m. and tickets are available at stubwire.com, an event flyer said. Paint the Park will be from 9 a.m. to noon, September 24th. Kimberly Watkins, president of the West Texas Gifts of Hope Board, said she got involved in the organization when Monica Tishoner was executive director and had gone to 2 of the organization's fundraisers. Watkins said her father, aunt, and several close friends are cancer survivors. Tishoner asked if Watkins would be interested in being on the board. Watkins said she thinks what West Texas Gifts of Hope does to help is really cool. She also noted that while the building campaign kicks off August 13th, it has been in works for several years. We have a lot of patients from the Presidio area and Alpine. It's just not feasible for them to drive back and forth, especially if they're really, really ill, she said. She added that the location, which is near a medical center, is convenient and the rooms are large enough for a patient and a caregiver. If people would like to donate, they can call Gifts of Hope's office or visit the link on the West Texas Gifts of Hope website. There are general admission and VIP tables for the Cancer Sucks concert. No donation is too small. We're always grateful for any support, Watkins said. OPD seeking suspects who fired shots at Sherwood. 3 juveniles were standing outside the east area of the pool fence line inside Sherwood Park Friday afternoon. The suspects fired 3 shots at the victims. The victims ran around the pool fence line and into the pool area to take shelter. Citizens at the pool called police and stated the victims were at the pool. There were no guns or shots fired inside the pool area, and the suspects fled the scene after firing the 3 shots, OPD reported via Facebook.
This is Jane reading for the OA from July 30th from the obituary and death notice section. In Odessa, Ernest Grafton Gardner III, 80 years of age, went to be with his Lord and Savior on July 23rd, following a brave battle with lung cancer. He is a beloved husband, father, and grandfather. Graveside services will be held on Monday, August 1st, in Sunset Memorial Gardens with Pastor James McCrary officiating. Butch was born on November 13th, 1941, to Ernest Grafton Gardner and Mary Boren Gardner in Beaumont, Texas. He is survived by his wife of 62 years, Helen Phyllis, his son Paul Ernest, and wife Michelle of Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. In Odessa, let it be known that on Monday, the 25th day of July, in the year of our Lord, 2022, a beloved daughter, sister, mother, and grandmother, Lynn Waterbury, has been delivered to her final rest at age 64. Lynn was given to this world in Kermit on November 7th, 1957, by the love between Bobby Jean and Anita Jo Hestand. Lynn was preceded in death by her twin granddaughters, Heather and Haley, her mother, Anita Jo, and her beloved husband, Earl. She is survived by her five children, Jesse Taylor and his wife, Amber, Michael Ryan, Kelly Ryan, Misty Truel, and husband, Joe, and Cody Ryan. Lynn had 14 grandchildren. Public viewing will be held on Sunday, July 31st, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be officiated by Jimmy Hestand and held on Monday, August 1st at 2 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will immediately follow services at American Heritage Cemetery, 4100 Farm to Market Road, 1788. Flowers may be sent to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny, Odessa, 79761. Amy Lynn Hudson, age 46, of Odessa, passed away on Tuesday, July 26th. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 1:30 on Sunday, July 30th at West Texas Cowboy Church in Gardendale with Pastor Andy Hill officiating. Burial will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, August 1st at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Amy was born in Ely, Nevada to Lane and Linda Roseland on December 27, 1975. She is survived by her husband, James Clinton Hudson of Odessa, her three sons, Jonathan Gage Murray of Lubbock, James Lyman Hudson, and Jacob Clinton Hudson of Odessa, her sisters Jennifer Sue Roseland of Gardendale, Melissa K. Roseland, and her parents Linda Jean Tomlinson of Odessa and John Lane Roseland of Abilene. Pallbearers will be James Hudson, Lane Roseland, David Hudson, Roger McDonald, Steve McDonald, and Dakota Howard. Amy was a beloved wife, mother, daughter, sister, and friend to many. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign the guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. The light remains. There are some who bring a light so great to the world that even after they have gone, the light remains. In Odessa, Roger Lynn Dodger, 57, died on Monday, July 25th. Celebration of life will be held at 6 p.m. on Monday, August 1st, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August 2nd, at Monahan's Memorial Cemetery. Reverend Johnny Touchstone and Pastor Jeppy Wilson are officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. In Odessa, Magdalena Castillo, 88, died on Monday, July 25th. graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. July 30th at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home. Isaac Espinosa, 64, of Odessa, died on Thursday, July 28th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, July 31st. Taylor, Staples cites strong oilfield stats. Hiring, employment near pre-pandemic levels, by Bob Campbell. Notwithstanding the oilfield's inevitable ups and downs, the jobs and hiring situation here in Midland and the Permian Basin remains strong, with the Texas Oil and Gas Association reporting very strong gains. Permian Basin Workforce Development Board CEO Willie Taylor says the region has almost recovered from the doldrums of the pandemic. Odessa's rate of unemployment is 4.8%, and Midland's is 3.6%, with a 5% being full employment, Taylor said Tuesday. Our civilian workforce has increased from 73,000 in Ector County a year ago to 81,000 now, and in Midland County it's gone from 101,000 to 104,000. The basin continues to see an uptick in its workforce, and oil and gas are leading the way. We're real close to the numbers we had prior to COVID. Taylor said most of the hiring has been by Halliburton, Patterson Drilling, Schlumberger, and other service companies. But it's all sectors, healthcare, transportation, construction, and education, he said. There's a shortage of teachers all over the Permian Basin right now and statewide. There are 12 million jobs available across the United States. It's a job seeker's market. Citing statistics reported by the Texas Workforce Commission, President Todd Staples said from Austin that Texas upstream and production sector oil and natural gas employments grew by 6,100 jobs from May to June, which was the highest monthly increase in data history, surpassing the previous record growth of 5,600 jobs in June of 2011. The Texas oil and gas industry continues to respond to meet the energy needs of Americans and align across the globe, Staples said. Demand for oil is forecasted to continue growing in 2022 and into 2023, so our nation must support certainly the consistent opportunities for domestic production. Pipelines and processing products our nation and the world depends upon. Since oil field employment bottomed out the height of the pandemic in September 2020, Staples said, the industry has added an average of 1,805 jobs per month for a total bump of 37,900 since then. At 194,900 upstream jobs, June 2022's jobs were up by 31,000, or 18.9% from June of 2021, he said. Andrews taps new band director, by Ruth Campbell. Andrews, Gary Wayne Winner, has the formidable task of taking over as Andrews High School band director following last November's tragic week that killed three, including previous band director Darren Johns and longtime retired teacher Mark Boswell. It also injured 37, according to the National Transportation Safety Board report. Winner has been the head middle school band director at Andrews previously, as in the 16th year of teaching, all in band. I'm extremely nervous, he said. Mr. Johns was a very talented music educator, well known throughout the state, and because of how well known he was and how great an educator he was, it's going to be hard to fill his shoes, Winter said. It does help that Winter was already in the district, familiar with the students and all they'd been through. Plus, he had support from his colleagues. The staff has absolutely been amazing to work with. Ted Adair Hare, Joseph Ferenza, David Conger, Aaron Myers, they've been great to work with. The kids love all of them. I think it's going to be an exceptional year because we have a good staff and we have good kids and we have so much support from the community and the administration here. So it'll be a fun year, Winter said. The band also is eligible for state competition this year. Renner grew up in Grapevine and earned a bachelor's degree in education from Northwestern State University in Nacogdoches, Louisiana. While he was teaching, he earned a master's degree there in music education. His primary instrument is the trombone. I've taught 2 years in Lake Charles, Louisiana, at a school called LaGrange High School. I was assistant band director there for 2 years, then went to Abbeville, Louisiana, and was the head band director at Abbeville High School for 4 years. Winter said, "My first wife passed away from cancer while I was in Abbeville, and so that brought me to Texas, where I got my master's degree in chaplaincy at Abilene Christian. From there, I taught for a year in Columbus ISD down near Houston, and I taught another year in Mesquite ISD, and then wound up in Abilene ISD at Craig Middle School for 4 years," he said. Winter is since remarried to his wife, Leanna. They have 3 boys, ages 9, 7, and 5, and have been married for 10 years. "I've always wanted to go back to the high school," Mr. Johns and I were talking because he was about to retire. He had probably another year or two left until retirement. He had discussed before the accident about being trained to take over his place. The time came a little sooner than what he and I both anticipated, Winter said. Projected enrollment for the band this year is 144 compared to 126 last year. "That's something that shocked us, too. After such an experience as we had last November, we thought we would probably have some decrease. Instead, we actually increased our numbers," Winter said. "We have a huge freshman class. That's my 8th grade class, which was with me since they were 6th graders, so I think that's probably a lot of it, just the transition. Them coming up with me," he added. "In speaking of my first wife passing away," Winter said, "he has a huge, firm faith in God. I know that God puts you where he wants you. I find it interesting that I've gone through my career from one place to another. I wound up in a place like Andrew's where we have this horrific accident, and then all of a sudden I feel like my chaplaincy work is put into play, having to help these students through this terrible accident. So I'm a firm believer that God put me where he put me to be able to help these students, and not just the students, but the other staff members too," Winter said. "Being able to listen to the other staff members and what they're going through has been helpful," he feels. Winter decided to become a band director when he was in the 7th grade. "My band directors were all smiling, having fun, laughing. I thought, any career where you can do that, that's the career I want. So I knew I wanted to be a band director and went after it," he said. In general, he said, band directing is transitioning to become kinder and gentler. The newer, younger directors are coming out of college with a lot of social and emotional learning techniques to deal with students who are going through events in their life. Teachers in general in music education are well as becoming more like counselors in a way. We're dealing with a lot of social emotional issues with students where we're having to walk beside them through these things," he added. Andrew's band camp was July 11th through 15th. They took a week off so the students could participate in 2 days for athletics. He noted that Andrew's students are involved in everything. "We're coming back this week to practice the evenings to make sure kids don't have to choose between athletics and band," Winter said. The band's show this year is titled Giver of Life. It's the 3 moments that come from an idea in John's. It opens up with barren, cracked land and trees that have nothing in them. That's the first movement, Winter says. The songs are Come Down to the River by Allison Cross and the hymn Come Thou Front of Every Blessing, performed in downbeat way. That leads into our second movement, for which we're using Garth Brooks' The River, he said. So then the rain and storms come, and the river opens up and starts to flood the land. The third movement is a group of 2 songs together, one by Thomas Bergeson, and the song is called Celebration. And then the second song is Come Thou Front of Every Blessing, but it's a very happy way, Winter said. During the third movement is when everything on the field turns green and there's flowers and the land's been brought back to life. So our show has 2 parts to it. There's the spiritual part of it. The idea of water in many different religions is important, like in the Christian faith, the idea of baptism by water. Your old self becoming new. Native American Indians had to live near water as they worshiped the water because water was their lifeline. So in general, water has a lot of spiritual meaning. We chose Come Thou Front and the Allison Cross song because of the spiritual idea of coming down the river and blessing coming through the font of God, he thought. Winter said water is the giver of life, also because it gives life to plants, which in turn gives life to animals, which in turn helps humans live. Clayton Harris of Marching 365, and formerly of UTPB, is the virtual designer for the show. The composer for the music is Luke McMillan. We gave them some ideas and they developed the show, Winter said. He said he has loved being in Andrews, extremely supportive, and they're some of the best students I've ever taught. I've taught in, like I said, many other locations, and these students are amazing students. They're resilient. They work hard. They persevere. I just can't talk highly enough about the students. Our Band Parent Boosters organization is very helpful, Winter said. Taya DeHare, the head middle school band director, said Winters will do a great job. The kids love and respect him, and it's been a smooth transition for the kids. He has everybody's best interest at heart. What's best for the kids? What's best for us? What's best for the program? Wayne is all about that, so he's a huge asset to us and the program. He's going to do a great job. Darren respected Wayne, so this is what Darren would have wanted, Hare said. UTPB looks to expand social work by staff writers. There are a wide range of directions to pursue when you finish a bachelor's degree in social work. Samantha Perales, University of Texas, Permian Basin, field director and lecturer, says, a lot of people may think of Child Protective Services as a destination for social workers. Perales said children welfare is a small subset of what they do. Social workers can be found in the offices of district attorneys, the military, veterans affairs, policy creation, and legislation, among other areas. Asked if a master's degree is needed, she said the more leisure certifications you can get, the better, because of higher level degrees. They're able to practice on their own or operate a clinic. Because the social work team is small, Perales said they're trying to expand the Bachelor's of Social Work program and add a master's degree. The idea has been proposed to the UT system. We currently have about 40 students, Perales said. Currently, there are 2 full-time faculty members and 3 adjunct and teach remotely. The students will do classroom learning, and then their final year is dedicated to field practice where they get the hands-on experience. However, myself and social worker chairman Dr. Samuel Terrazas have been piloting this really immersive, hands-on, stimulated learning inside those traditional courses that they would take. For instance, they may take a class in social justice or cultural diversity, and our goal and what we've really strived to do when we took over this program is start the hands-on learning at a very beginning. That way, the senior year will not be filled with worries or fears that the student will have all sorts of barriers on hands-on practice, Perales said. Our philosophy is exposure at the earliest point, which will develop their skills. Then by the time they're in field practicum, they have a lot of those skill sets. We want to make sure they're confident. Competent social work. Students going into the field, so we blended the two.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.